I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. In April of 2016, Terrell Thomas, a 38-year-old with bipolar disorder, was deprived of water for 7 straight days at the Milwaukee County Jail, and he died. There's been an investigation, an inquest jury, into the circumstances surrounding his death, but there also have been other deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail during the year 2016. This hour, we're going to have several guests with us who will give us an update on what's happening. Will charges be filed against the Milwaukee County Sheriff? Some have called for that because he oversees the Milwaukee County Jail. Who appeared before the inquest jury, which recommended criminal charges? Will Milwaukee District Attorney John Chisholm follow up with charges? And many other questions this hour. We'll have several guests with us. Chuck Hornbach followed this story and has been continuing to follow this story. He's joining us with the latest news update. We'll be speaking with a personal injury attorney who's one of several attorneys representing the Thomas family. We'll talk with the director of Wisdom, a faith-based organization that focuses on criminal justice reform, and with a litigation director for the Legal Aid Society Milwaukee, a public interest law firm, and he will give us some history about other problems with the Milwaukee County Jail. We start with Chuck Hornbach, who's been following this story. Hello, Chuck. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Hello.
Hi. So why was there an inquest jury here, and when did that start?
Well, it started now a couple weeks ago on a Monday, and District Attorney Chisholm decided to go this way. I think he wanted the advice of the community of 6 or 7 members of a jury to help him decide this very controversial case, and he took them through 5 days of testimony from various witnesses, many of whom worked at the jail, to describe what happened to Mr. Thomas and what maybe procedures weren't followed or what information wasn't shared about his lack of water, Mr. Thomas's lack of water. And it then wound up on a Monday, 6 days later, when the jury, inquest jury, made its advisory recommendations.
And advisory means?
It means that they gave their advice to the district attorney that charges should be filed against 2 jail supervisors and 5 officers who were on duty at the Milwaukee County Jail. District Attorney Chisholm has not given a real timeline as to when he might announce if there will be charges, if he's going to charge all 7, or whether he'll choose a smaller number, or I suppose he could choose a larger number, perhaps, but I wouldn't expect any more than 7 to be charged. But he hasn't really said when he's going to. But he wanted, I think, the advice of the community on this one because it's so controversial.
And there were questions about why Sheriff David Clark was not included in this. Why wasn't he?
Right. Mr. Chisholm, in brief break, the opening day of the trial, I asked him about that, and others have asked him. He just said, listen, don't read anything into that, just that we decided to focus on the individuals who may have been most directly responsible or involved in Mr. Thomas's death. So I don't think the district attorney wanted to net the sheriff at this point, because he's while he's the head of the jail by title, or by head of the department that runs the jail, Sheriff Clark wasn't involved in the day-to-day activities there.
Mm-hmm. And Chisholm can do this at his leisure. Is he under pressure to make announcement whether or not there will be criminal charges soon, or can he just take some time?
Well, you know, it'll be partly up to some of the people in this room, perhaps, asking questions, and also the news media and the community. Whether, you know, sometimes community pressure brings an announcement on things, certainly did in Mr. Chisholm did not file criminal charges in the Dontre Hamilton case, but I expect something relatively soon, whether it'll be on a Friday afternoon or a Monday morning, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about some other cases. There were other deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail last year. Have those been investigated, and do you imagine that they will be more thoroughly as a result of this death?
Well, there's been some effort, I think, by the county and sort of through the county executive's office to take a closer look at some of the things here. We haven't heard a lot of details about that. Again, attorneys who are preparing cases and studying these things day after day may have more to say about that. But these are the only criminal charges or inquests that have been filed, involving the Thomas case. This is the only inquest. We don't know about the other 3 yet. It's possible, I suppose, but it depends on how much of a case the investigators can make. Mm,
thank you very much, Chuck. Chuck Kornbach, our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Milwaukee, who's been covering this story day by day and month by month. We are going to continue our conversation. We have lots of guests with us in our Milwaukee studio, and we'll be welcoming phone calls from you as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Mark Thompson, personal injury attorney who is one of several attorneys representing the Thomas family, is with us. Mark, thanks very much for being here.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
David Liners is here, director of Wisdom, a faith-based organization that focuses on criminal justice reform. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And Pete Konieczny, litigation director for the Legal Aid Society in Milwaukee, a public interest law firm. Pete, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Let me say that again so make sure your mic is on. Say thank you again.
Oh, yeah, thank you again.
Yeah. Let's move you both to the same microphone because that one doesn't seem to be working very well. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll share that microphone, and that way we'll be sure to hear. Let's start with what the status is now with the Thomas family and what they have been through. I'm sure that some of this testimony was very hard for them to hear. What do they think about what the inquest jury had to say about this? Do they feel some sense of at least knowledge of what happened to Terrell?
You know, I think the family's general response is that they were very pleased that District Attorney John Chisholm pursued the case to an inquest. They're very pleased that there was a finding of probable cause from the jurors, and they look forward to seeing which charges actually get filed by, you know, Mr. Chisholm and his staff. Overall, you know, Mr. Chisholm and his assistants did a spectacular job, frankly, from my point of view, laying out a very complicated case under a short time frame. And we only heard part of the story. And what little bit we did hear was sufficient to convince, you know, the jurors, our members of the public, that there was probable cause that a crime had been committed.
And the medical examiner's office ruled this a homicide, a death by dehydration?
That's correct. And, you know, that there was no dispute about that finding. The whole question was, when did the water get turned off, who did it, and who was responsible for it? You know, it was my sense just watching and, you know, our shared response that the testimony by Captain George Gold that put the finger right on Major Evans, that she had been told about the incident, and you know he has subsequently now resigned. There's a lot more to this story. It's my assumption that the sheriff knew or certainly should have known about the practice that was going on in this jail. I mean, key testimony came in on the last day of the inquest that showed that the week after, there were inmates that had been disciplined by having their water shut off, unrelated to any flooding in the cell. So we know that there was a policy in place in our jail of withholding water from inmates to try to discipline them. That's unlawful. And this doesn't occur without the primary policymaker, Sheriff David Clark, knowing about it. You know, no one is going to be operating day in, day out, turning off water to discipline inmates, and the sheriff doesn't know about it. So we are going to find out a lot more as we go forward.
How?
Well, I think the trial, the criminal trial itself, much more will come out. As a lawyer, I just look, we have seven individuals that have been determined to have probable cause of a crime. You know, while I'm a civil lawyer, you know, all these individuals, I'm assuming, are going to retain counsel. And if anybody is, any, you know, defense lawyers are making any sense, some of these individuals, especially the correctional officers on the front line that have no real power and are just being told what to do day in, day out, you know, somebody is going to start blowing the whistle. I think we're going to hear a lot more.
And one more question for you. Terrell was bipolar. Why was he not? Is there a special place for people who have psychiatric conditions in the Milwaukee County Jail?
Yeah, we learned from the testimony that there was a medical unit. He should have been in that medical unit. He should have never been put on the fourth floor. He should have never been put in the special needs. He should have been on the second floor in the medical unit from day one. And, you know, we just got a brief glimpse in the testimony that there may have been personnel with armor that had something to do with Mr. Thomas not being held in the medical unit, given his size. And for someone with mental illness who's incapacitated by their mental illness to be locked up 24 hours a day, virtually solitary confinement with no water and nothing but dry loaf, you know, the expert that Mr. Chisholm called, Mr. Horn called it torture, that we allowed torture to occur in our jail in 2016 is unconscionable.
Is this a very unusual practice from what you've learned about the history of how inmates are treated at the Milwaukee County Jail to withhold water, David?
I don't know about that specifically, about the withholding water, but very extreme measures, and particularly for people with mental illness. It's not unusual in our jail here in Milwaukee, and also actually, frankly, within the state prison system. The same thing happens. We deal with mental illness as if it's somehow willfulness or something. I don't know what the thought is, but what's his name? Peter Drucker, the management guru, always says, you know, culture eats policy for lunch. And I just think there's a culture in our jail that's very insensitive, that's very unknowing, uncaring about mental health, that deals with people as if they're not human beings. So while we have to hold individuals accountable for their actions, I believe in that very much, but we really, I hope, will take this as an opportunity to look at the system, to look at the culture that starts at the very top, and say, why is this permitted and why are we not taking the steps we all know that we need to take to deal with people who are sick as though they're sick?
Mm-hmm. Pete, why do you think there were 4 deaths in the Milwaukee County Jail last year alone?
That was obviously a bad 6-month period, and there hadn't been nearly that frequent of deaths in the jail at any point that I'm familiar with, and I've been involved with that jail since the mid-90s. The deaths were all for different reasons, although I think the idea of the culture and not having a lot of concern for the individual, the care of people with mental illness in the jail, I think is part of something that connects all of the 4 cases. I think the ability to look at somebody you don't want to interact with and not give them the attention, I think that probably is part of it. And also the thing you have to understand about the jail and all jails is you have the people who are in charge of custody or security, basically the sheriff's staff, in the Milwaukee County Jail, and you do have medical and mental health staff in our jail as well as in any other institution. So you have the side that is responsible for caring for people really as patients, and those that are treating them as people to be controlled and keep secure and safe, and those are 2 different cultures that are sometimes in conflict, and that you may have the psychiatric staff wanting something done with somebody, and they need to be empowered to direct the care of someone with mental illness when they're being treated inappropriately by the custody staff. And I think that's part of what went wrong here. And I think also looking at the training and attitudes staffing levels, an audit of, I think, the entire operation at the jail, because the common denominator, I think, in these cases was that too much was left to the custody staff, the non-medical people, to be identifying whether somebody needed assistance. And in several of the deaths, the medical people got involved when it was too late. They weren't summoned until it was too late. The Thomas situation, I think the medical staff was involved. They had a responsibility to see Mr. Thomas on a daily basis, and somehow, in part because of the punitive or aggressive lockdown approach there, they didn't have access. He was put in a disciplinary area of the jail, locked in for all of 5 or 6 days that he was in discipline, and not taken out even for his 1 hour of rec, where had he been taken out, somebody may have assessed him more appropriately or may have offered him some water.
Mm. So it could have been a situation where he didn't see very many people at all. Obviously, if you're without water all these days, I understand that he lost 35 pounds during that time. Somebody must have been, you would think, noticing what was going on. Was nobody looking at him?
What I learned from the inquest testimony, and what I look forward to seeing when the inquest exhibits are released to the public, you know, presumably in the near future, is that, you know, there were videotapes, mm-hmm. and we know that there were 3 days of videotapes that were not saved. So we have the whole, you know, what do we know about why those tapes weren't saved? Because those were the tapes that depicted, James Ramsey Guy, the correctional officer, turning off the water. And that was information that Captain Gold and Major Evans knew about in time to save it. So we know that was missing. But what we will have is, you know, the 4 days of tapes to review to see who was actually there. Some of those tapes were played during the inquest, and you could see the officer look in or not. In addition to the officers, we know that there were people from Armor that their responsibility was to do the psych eval. They claimed that they did them. I'm waiting to see the videotapes to see whether, in fact, they did them. Because if they aren't visible on the tapes, then we know that they weren't doing their job. And if they are visible, then we know that they completely failed to do any type of evaluation. If you're looking through a window and you see someone naked and you can see the toilet and it's dry and there's food crumbs all over and somebody's deteriorating in front of you and other inmates are telling staff, listen, he doesn't have water. Mm-hmm. If you are have any type of competency or care at all and you're a representative of Armor, your job is to simply say, look, we need to go see him. This issue of access is not one that they were prevented. They just didn't do it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why the ongoing criminal case will tell us a lot more. And certainly the civil suit will find out all of that.
The sheriff, David Clark, has said that what we need to put our focus actually is on he was in jail for shooting, and that we need to put our attention on the crime that this guy probably committed and not on what was happening in the jail. And I'm not putting thoughts in his mind, but a lot of people feel, you know, you did a crime, and we don't know if he did or not. He didn't have a trial yet. This is a bad thing, and so what if he has bad conditions? So what if he was deprived of water? He wasn't a good guy. I mean, that's where the focus has been. Some have put it there. What do you say to that?
So this might sound strange. I work for a faith-based organization, but one of our real beliefs is that we just have to stop thinking about what people deserve and start thinking about what people need. And a person, he may have done something bad. He did something dangerous. There was obviously something wrong with the man. And what we need to do is look and say, what does he as a human being need in order to be well, in order for the rest of us to be safe? to keep going down the road of culpability. And he's, you know, people are dividing the world into bad people who deserve to suffer and good people who need to be protected from them, is getting us in a world of trouble. We need to stop thinking in those kinds of terms. When someone does something that's clearly a result of an illness, our response as a society should be, how can we help this person become well, not how can we make them suffer more? People who are mentally ill are already suffering greatly. And to just say we're going to heap more suffering on them and somehow expect that that's going to make them better is just, that's crazy on our part.
Pete?
The sheriff is absolutely wrong to say that what somebody was accused of should factor at all into how they're taken care of in the jail. The sheriff's responsibility is to keep everybody safe. And if somebody is there with a mental health condition or a medical condition, they have to get quality care. And you don't discount that one iota because they are accused of doing something violent. It may affect where you have somebody and what kind of security you have, but everybody deserves to be cared for when they're there, when they're in the jail. So absolutely, he was wrong about that.
We're going to welcome phone calls for all of our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're centering on the death of Terrell Thomas, a 38-year-old who died in Milwaukee County Jail. He was deprived of water for 7 straight days at the jail. He died on the 8th day. We're hearing about that case, and there were others. There were 4 people who died in Milwaukee County Jail last year. We know more about Terrell's case because of the inquest jury, which took place and gave their findings last week, saying there was a probable cause of a crime by 6 jail officials. And we're talking about those officials, the atmosphere at the Milwaukee County Jail, the people on top who are overseeing the jail, and whether or not people like David Clark should be charged, as well as other people who are working at the jail. We have several guests with us. We'll reintroduce them and take your many phone calls that are starting to come in. 800-486-8655 is the number, and this is the Ideas Network. All right, gentlemen, lots of phone calls are coming in. We will go to them. 800-486-8655. And Leigh in Williams Bay is our first caller. Hi, Leigh. Hello, are you there? No, Leigh isn't there, so we'll wait for the other phone calls to come in. Where is this moving at this point? What would each of you like to see happen so that there are not more deaths at the Milwaukee County Jail, and so that those who may have been guilty of criminal activity be punished for that?
The families want justice in this case, and I think what that means is that Mr. Chisholm and his office will need to go out and get convictions of those culpable. We will see civil lawsuits where the families can seek to be made whole to the extent that's possible under the law. In both those instances, then the truth is going to come out, and we're going to get over this myth that somehow this is Terrell Thomas's fault. You know, he had a mental illness. Previous incident with proper medication, he was fine. They arrested him here. They put him in the jail. If he would have been put on the medical unit, been given the medication, he would have been fine. We do not lock someone up and turn off their water and punish them when they're mentally ill. I think at the county level, you know, we have an election coming up, but before then, I really think the county supervisors and our county exec should take steps to do some kind of really serious investigation into what occurred. I mean, the fact that they're so quiet on this is frankly stunning. Mm.
Was he on bipolar medication and he was not given it at the jail?
He had been on medication previously. They didn't put him on. He wasn't on the time. But the point is they knew that. They knew he needed it. They knew he needed care, not punishment.
Pete, what do you think about that? What needs to happen?
There is a class action lawsuit settlement that has been in place since 2001.
2001?
Yes. There's a class action for the overcrowding of the jail and medical and mental health care back in 1996, the case was settled and there was a consent decree that in place. It's a lawsuit by the ACLU and Legal Aid Society. So we represent the class of inmates in the settlement. And so so part of what is happening since last year was the scrutiny of the court's appointed medical expert in that case who's reviewed this. And there has been some changes in terms of the interposing the psych staff, the mental health staff, before someone is transferred to the disciplinary of the area of the jail. But that's still an ongoing process, is what has to be done to change within the jail. And that's covered by the medical side, the medical and mental health side is covered by the existing class action consent decree. It does not cover how they perform their job. It's structural position, job positions and procedures. It does not cover whether somebody doesn't do their job appropriately. It also does not cover the sheriff's role in the classification and where people are placed and how they're treated by the custody staff, by the sheriff's staff. And I think going forward, that could be, well, it would take the sheriff's cooperation, but I think an audit like was done for the House of Correction in 2008 that resulted in changes at the House of Correction was, I think, a top-to-bottom audit of policies and procedures, as well as staffing and morale within the sheriff's staff. So I think that has to be done on the county side, on the sheriff's side. And we hope this process and the lawsuits hopefully are bringing out important information for correction within the procedures of the mental health and medical staff that can be pushed on and will be in the current lawsuit. The medical monitor will be here in May for his every 6-month visit, specifically focusing on the four deaths and the information from the Thomas inquest.
Mm-hmm. David.
So clearly there needs to be justice in this particular case and that the truth needs to come out. But what I hope comes of this is that it really, as a society, we have to have a conversation about what we want jails and prisons to do and to be. That we've created a culture, and again, it's not just isolated to this incident or even to the four deaths. We've created a culture that's extremely inhumane. And again, it's not even just in our county jail. You know, the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility, just a couple blocks away, has also had people die in sort of unexplained ways. We've had people die in solitary confinement around the state in our state prisons. We really need to demand an openness that we can't just write this off as one bad incident that a few people did. Individuals need to be accountable for their actions. I absolutely believe that. But this needs to be an opportunity for us to say, you know, there's currently a law that just got introduced in Madison basically prohibiting the use of solitary confinement for anyone with a diagnosed mental illness. We need to implement that. We need to just really upend the whole way that we think about doing corrections in our state. We're not solving any problems. We're actually making them worse with the way that we're handling things. And so I hope that this is an entry, that we're not just going to – it's certainly obviously wrong to blame the victim. But it's also just to say that this is one isolated incident. When you have an unhealthy system, everyone becomes unhealthy. We're actually creating an atmosphere where this is allowed to happen. So we need not just to change some individuals, we need to change the atmosphere, and we need to change the way we look at why we do this.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in now. Let's start with Dane in Madison. Hi, Dane.
Hi, thank you. I agree with your guest that eliminate solitary confinement for mental health patients. And I even question why are mental health patients even put into prisons or jails in the first place? Why are they not put into hospitals? But my question to you is, and it's your guess, is if Sheriff David Clark was not a black conservative, do you think there would be such an outcry to call on his prosecution if he wasn't a black conservative? If he was just a regular black liberal, do you think that white liberals would actually go after David Clark?
You think he's been targeted because he's conservative?
Oh, there's no doubt. You know, David Clark's an outspoken, you know, black conservative, and white liberals will not put up with that.
What about what he said?
What about there's no proof what he said.
Well, he hasn't said very much, but he has talked about how he went into it with a medical examiner, and he's really said that the media needs to focus on this guy's crime and not on how he was treated. You think that's all right?
I don't know. I'm not an expert on the subject, but I just find it I find it very peculiar that the liberal media.
All right, we got you. Is it we're targeting David Clark because he's a conservative African American?
I don't think there's any basis in fact for that proposition. In my capacity as a lawyer and handling civil rights cases, anyone, and I've sued I live in Milwaukee. I've sued the city of Milwaukee, and no one would say that this is a conservative operation, or that Chief Flynn, who I've sued and also represented, in the case. But when anyone in law enforcement assumes the responsibilities to have adequate medical care at their facility, and then allows a practice, a policy of using water and the withholding water from inmates, they need to be called out. And I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that Sheriff Clark he calls himself a Democrat. He clearly is a conservative one, but he ran, and he is a Democrat, and that there is any basis for the proposition that either his race or his political views have anything to do with his failure to do anything in this case. Other than, ironically, he was interviewing in New York, spent a lot of time in Trump Towers with our current president when all this was happening. So, to the extent that his politics played in, he was clearly out of town and not doing his business.
Let's go next to Chad in Madison. Hi, Chad.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
So I just want to make the point that not everyone in jail is guilty. They haven't gone to trial yet. And in fact, my own wife spent 4 days in jail in Atlanta once coming back from Japan because there were some concerns about her immigration status. She was cleared after 4 days, but she was still in jail for 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And lest anyone think I'm just another Madison liberal, I build jails. I work for an architecture firm in the construction department that designs jails, and I'm actually driving back from a jail project right now. And most sheriffs agree with that. Most sheriffs view treating the people in their jails with respect as a priority, because if you go to jail and you're deprived of water for 4 or 5 days and you survive it and come out, the next time you're contacted by that sheriff's deputies, you're going to fight. You're going to resist. You're going to make their jobs more difficult and more dangerous. And most sheriffs recognize that. So I guess that's everything I have to say about it. I mean, most of the sheriffs I deal with would agree that people in jail need to be treated with respect. I mean, most of them call them Mr. or Miss or Mrs. or whatever and know them by name and really at least act like they care.
Pete.
I have no particular opinion about Sheriff Clark's role in this. I think the how jails are run is a matter of the rights of the individuals. It's how you treat people with respect. And I think, like the caller mentioned, his wife was in jail. I think we should want our jails to be a place that you're not afraid if your family members or loved ones were there that they would have to fear for their safety. So I think that's the ongoing concern with our lawsuit involving the jail all this time. It's to try to make it as safe a place as possible. My only comment really with regard to Sheriff Clark, I think disagreeing with his blaming the victim approach on this, which I think was very inappropriate and insensitive. Also, I would expect a little bit disappointed he hasn't taken any responsibility for it, because I think one thing that became clear in the inquest was how poor the communication was. The command staff, the two top people said that everybody below them violated the specific policies, but the turning off water was apparently a pretty widespread practice. So there's a disconnect there on the management side, and I would think the sheriff would want to acknowledge at least a responsibility, even if he wasn't personally involved, to try to improve that condition going forward. So we could say it's a place that if your wife or your teenage son got, 20-year-old son was put in there, that you would not be afraid in terms of the safety.
Mm-hmm. I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, the DA, John Chisholm, who did ask the question, what if Terrell Thomas was your family member? What if he was your son or your brother or your neighbor? And we do need to think about people that way. Maybe we're not very good at it these days. That's the way we need to look at it. We're all in this thing living together, right?
Absolutely. It sounds very trite. I mean, one of the groups that we work with in Wisdom that we're very proud of is Ex-Prisoners Organizing, EXPO, which is a group of formerly incarcerated people. And their number one concern is we want to be seen as human beings, members of families, and assets to the community. And we just need to look at people that way, even when they look different than us, even when they might do things that are occasionally frightening. I think the other thing, just in response to your caller, I also have gotten a chance to meet a lot of sheriffs in the course of my work, and a lot of people really are very good people, and jails are very different because our counties are very different, and they're different sizes and things. But I think we really need to look past whether somebody's a nice person and actually look at the systems, look at the systems that they're in charge of. Very, very nice people can be in very, very dysfunctional systems, and the results are going to be the same. Mm. So I think I always get concerned when we're trying to decide whether or not somebody's a nice guy. I'd much rather evaluate what they do.
Mark, this question goes to you, and it's from Gail, who says, were these actual county employees, or were they people from the company that Sheriff Clark, the private company that Sheriff Clark hired?
I'm assuming that the question is in terms of the individuals were found to have, that there was probable cause that they committed a crime. Those were all correctional officers or members of the sheriff's department. All the listed potential defendants in a criminal action at this point in time would be county employees.
Ann in Virginia, hi.
Hello.
Hi,
can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
My question is why people with mental illnesses are even being kept in our prisons. And I'm wondering, what the problem is with getting these people into a proper care facility and getting them the care that they need.
I can take a shot at that to start with. I mean, one is a lot of times people with mental illnesses have in fact done something that's been against the law. I mean, it's not that people are picked up because of their mental illness. But often enough, instead of looking at the underlying cause, why did the person behave in a way that's outside our standards, that's where we need to look at it. And it's beginning to happen in some quarters that people are beginning to start to make that distinction and say, if the real underlying problem is a mental illness, even though the person did commit a crime, let's solve the problem rather than kind of look to punish the crime. But the other thing I would say is we have a real lack of other mental health services,
right,
that we offer to people. So often I think it's kind of as a last resort. People who can't be on their own, we wind up putting them in our jails. And they've become the largest mental health institutions in the country, our jails. I was very heartened the other day to hear that in Nashville, where they're needing to build a new jail, they're actually going to build a smaller jail, and they're going to build a separate freestanding mental health facility.
Really?
That will include kind of, security and things for people who are, who need to be kept a watch on. But it is. I mean, there are people who are beginning to see that there are other ways to do this.
Pete, you wanted to talk.
Yes. Actually, in Milwaukee County, there is some progress in that area. We do have something called the Community Justice Council, which is interagency collaboration. and they won a large grant from the MacArthur Foundation, which is focused on reducing the population of the jail. And the specific focus, the target that they've had, is to change how we do the jailing of people with mental illness. Mm-hmm. That's was too late for Mr. Thomas, and still something that's a ways in the future. But we're talking about this model that I think has been done in Miami that has been successful. They want a stabilization center. So rather than bring someone to jail because maybe his crime is, or accusation is too dangerous to be at the mental health complex, the mental health facility, because it's got a criminal aspect to it, but to try to sort it out in a place that's more appropriate for the treatment. That's what we're moving towards, and I think we hope to, the community will embrace that, because that's really what's needed.
More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the death of Terrell Thomas in the Milwaukee County Jail in April of 2016. He was deprived of water for 7 days, and he died of dehydration. We're talking about other deaths that have taken place that have not had external investigation. What we know at this point and how we proceed. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And we'll take more calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Let's go back to phone calls. Ray in Rhinelander, hi.
Hi. I have worked extensively for 25 years. I retired in the 90s, and a wide range of all of this with mental health, dual diagnosis, substance abuse, et cetera, et cetera. I worked in every capacity of every institution in the state. Never once have I ever heard of a procedure to withhold water. The only time I've seen anything related to water is when an individual is constantly flooding the cell, or if they're suicidal and they're trying to actually stick their head in the toilet and drown themselves. But even then, you know, even then, you have what's called precautionary observation, suicide watch. You have somebody individually monitoring that person, writing down what they're doing 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and you know they're given water and water cups every 15, 20 minutes to drink because they're agitated, or their medications. I can go on and on and on, but it's always taken care of in the aspect of the individual on what's going on in that moment. And there is no excuse for withholding water. I have never heard of this. This is absurd. I mean, what are we evolving to in this society when we accuse somebody again of their behavior, when they have mental health issues, we punish them, and we withhold basic substance from them, and they're not being observed for behaviors and monitored. That's insane.
Thank you, Ray. Thanks. Mark.
I those were sort of my basic thoughts too before I had even heard any of the facts. What we do know is that Martin Horn, a leading expert in the country on jail procedures, called what occurred torture. It's beyond belief, frankly, and it's why the Sheriff David Clark needs to address the situation. To continue to hide behind the alleged conduct of a person that would suffer from mental illness is unconscionable.
Mm. And we should talk about flooding the cell. Mr. Thomas had, he had bipolar, he had put a mattress in a toilet at some point, and was that the reason why they decided not to give him any water?
The story is, he did flood his cell in 4C. They moved him to 4D, a disciplinary unit, and turned off his water. It was against all policy that was written. Now we know that there was an unwritten policy that withheld water to discipline. He was given no suicide mattress. They could have given him a mattress that would have been very, very hard for him to flood. They never gave him an opportunity to have water and a mattress in the disciplinary cell. And to the extent that anyone was ever allowed to turn off water to clean up the mess, they must then return water. You know, if you're not going to turn the water on in the room, then you have to bring
water.
Bring bottled water.
Right.
You have to make sure the person has water. I mean, we don't punish people by letting them die by dehydration. I mean, first of all, he wasn't even convicted.
Right.
He had been charged. We'll never know what would have happened there.
All right, let's go next to David in somewhere. Hi, David. Where are you?
Yeah, Northwest Wisconsin.
Thanks, David.
This society has been closing mental institutions since the 60s. And if you want to read an excellent brand-new book by Ron Powers, it's called No One Cares About Crazy People. And it's an amazing, well-written history of the closing of mental health care in this country and supposed putting it off onto community care, which for severe mental health problems has simply not worked. And that has resulted in so many mental health people getting charged with behavior on the street and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. and getting themselves in prison.
Yeah. We have a real problem in this area, don't we, Mark? David, response.
We do. It's just we've just neglected huge portions of our communities, and it's inconvenient, but it's there that we have a lot of people who suffer from mental illness, and it's why it's very frightening to see kind of moves to pull mental health services back out of guaranteed health care that people can get, but we need we really need. To look at how we're dealing with it in general, and we have to stop criminalizing mental illness. That's the first step. Is we have to stop making it worse by criminalizing it and by actually exacerbating people's problems.
Well, the wheels of justice move darn slowly, don't they, Pete? It's taking a long. We've known about this for a long time that we have problems in this area.
Yes, and it's a problem with funding. There's a lot of explanations you could give for how we got where we are. A lot of it goes down to the political will and funding for the kind of care and institutions. Also, just on the institutional level, when we have places like jails and prisons, is an occupational hazard is you stop seeing people as people. A famous flawed experiment called the Stanford Prison Experiment, where they put people, students, in the role of being guards and prisoners, and it became a Lord of the Flies type situation. Again, it was a flawed experiment, but it shows what happens when you depersonalize and put somebody in a role to do certain things. And that, I think, characterized our mental health system, is where we don't see people as people. And inside these institutions, it's a very hard job to have that. And they need that help and support, if you work there, to guard against the cynicism and not seeing people as individuals and as people. So I think that's part of the concern is that providing that help so you don't have the burnout or the cynicism that can happen in an institutional setting.
Yeah. One more call. We have a very short period of time left, so we'll just get a yes or no. George in Fond du Lac, hi.
Hi. Just a real quick question. I heard your guest mention it briefly. I'm wondering if this does meet the technical definition of torture. Is it?
Is dehydration a form of torture?
According to the district attorney's expert, Mr. Horn, that's what it is.
Anybody else? Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the one thing on that point is I think what seemed to be clear is that a lot of the people dealing with Mr. Thomas didn't realize his water was off, but they also didn't take the time to figure that out. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody wanted to have him not have water that time, but it was a command, and nobody looked back, and then nobody listened when all the signs and the opportunities appeared.
Yeah. Thank you all very much for being with us. It was very informative. I'm glad we did the show. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Our thanks to Pete Konieczny, litigation director for the Milwaukee-based Legal Aid Society. We thank David Liners, director of Wisdom. Tell us more about that program with ex-offenders, too. We want to do a show on that. Wisdom is a faith-based organization focused on criminal justice reform. Mark Thompson is a personal injury attorney. He is one of several representing the Terrell Thomas family. Thanks so much to Gretchen Brown for producing this hour, and thanks to Colleen Leahy for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. News is coming up from National Public Radio tomorrow, in case you're wondering. Yes, indeed, we will be talking about the firing of FBI Director James Comey by the President of the United States, so we'll have several guests with us exploring that. David McCullough is going to be with us, great historian. His books are marvelous, and he gives you a sense of hope that things are going to be okay in America. And also we'll highlight many of his favorite people in history. We'll start with John Adams, maybe. And then John Quincy Adams. And then Ben Franklin. The list goes on.